You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting. Welcome to The Blitz. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, coming to you February 27th, 2020. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you also choose to go on over to RenegadeTribune.com and buy some products from HeathenHerbs.com. Tonight, I am going to be talking a bit more about this coronavirus from Wuhan and what this could really be all about. And why it was rolled out now. And it does seem like they had plans to roll this out for quite some time, and that perhaps some people were in the know. I have to question whether or not this writer, Dean Koontz, was in the know when he wrote The Eyes of Darkness. This story has been spreading around even mainstream outlets who have picked up on people posting on social media because the similarities really are uncanny. Now, here's what's really interesting about this. Dean Koontz wrote this book, The Eyes of Darkness, in 1981. That's when it was first published. But when it was first published, back then the Soviet Union was the big bad guy, the enemy of the day. And so the virus was originally named Gorky 400. And it was named after the Russian city Gorky, where it was created. Now, it seems like a change was made in 2008 when this book was re-released, republished. And it was no longer Gorky 400, but Wuhan 400. Again, named for the city where it was created in China, where the current coronavirus originated. Now, what else was going on in 2008? Well, there was a massive economic crash, which was rightfully blamed on the banksters. And a lot of people lost their fortunes while, well, the bankers, the 1% of the 1%, many of whom are Jews, made out like bandits. They gave themselves bonuses. They got even wealthier in the following decade. And as we know, these things go in cycles, the boom and bust. And nobody believed that we were just completely in the free and clear and things would be on the up and up forevermore. In fact, it seems like these cycles seem to go in 11 years, roughly, until the next economic recession or crash. And we've been waiting for the so-called everything bubble. So was there a reason that perhaps in 2008, this virus was changed to the Wuhan 400? Could it maybe have been setting up kind of an excuse for why the economy would crash the next time so that the people who are the ones making out like bandits wouldn't be blamed again? Just a thought. It's kind of weird that in 2008, this virus, actually, I don't know if it's technically a virus, but this bioweapon, because it is a bioweapon in the book, is changed to the Wuhan 400. What's also interesting about this book cover itself, and I just picked up on this as I started doing this show here, is that the cover image has a face in a window. And many of you know that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation was involved in this Event 201, which predicted the spread and much death related to the coronavirus in a simulation they were running just months before it actually took place. And Bill is big on the vaccines and all the rest and is part of that whole Seed Vault project. A lot of things about Bill Gates, but just weird that this face is in a window when it appears that Microsoft might actually be the umbrella corporation from the Resident Evil series. And isn't it just such a coincidence that Corona is an anagram of raccoon, and Raccoon City is where the T-virus in the Resident Evil series originated. Okay, so the quote from the book here, The Eyes of Darkness, it was around then that a Chinese scientist named Li Chen defected to the United States, carrying a diskette record of China's most important and dangerous new biological weapon in a decade. They call the stuff Wuhan 400, because it was developed at their rDNA labs outside of the city of Wuhan, and it was the 400th viable strain of man-made microorganisms created at that research center. Wuhan 400 is a perfect weapon. It goes on. Now, there are news sites out there and the fact-checker sites like Snopes who have said this is completely bunk. Yeah, there are some similarities. It's called Wuhan. But, guys, it's not a bioweapon. The coronavirus is not a bioweapon. So, the thing in the book, Wuhan in the book, is that's a bioweapon. The coronavirus, not a bioweapon. Really? You're saying that for certain? Like, that's a fact? Really? Where it supposedly has HIV additions to it? So it's like SARS, but with HIV in there as well. Oh, and also, there are some other differences as well, because, you know, it has different incubation times and fatality rates. So it's not the same thing. Just forget all about it. Forget about The Eyes of Darkness by Dean Koontz. The time period is so spot on, though, and they don't mention this in the Snopes debunking. In around 2020, a severe pneumonia-like illness will spread throughout the globe, attacking the lungs and the bronchial tubes and resisting all known treatments. Really? Nothing to see here, folks. Don't worry about it. Now, what I found weird was when I Googled the Eyes of Darkness, they always have kind of an official Google entry to the right, which is usually a Wikipedia article that is kind of summarized there. And their little snippet was just weird because at the top it says, The Eyes of Darkness, novel by Dean Koontz, and it's rated 3.9 out of 5 on Goodreads. Okay, 86% like this book. And then the little description below, and he even has an image there, Eyes of Darkness, Dean Koontz. But in the description, it says, The Eyes of Darkness is a thriller novel by American writer Rob Hopkins, released in 2020. The book focuses on a mother who sets out on a quest to find out if her son truly did die 1 year ago, or if he's still alive. So Rob Hopkins says, and then it links to the Wikipedia. But right below that, even though it says in the description that it was released in 2020, the originally published stat here says May 10th, 1981, author Dean Koontz, not Rob Hopkins. So I looked into who this Rob Hopkins is, and the only one I was able to find, really find as a writer, was from England. He's this environmental activist. Huh. Kind of reminds me of that quote from, was it Prince Philip, who said, if he'd die, he'd want to be reincarnated as a virus so he could wipe out a huge part of the human population. He's an environmentalist. Yes. So I was only able to find that connection with Rob Hopkins. I'm just wondering how in the world Google would get this wrong, because you click on the Wikipedia link and it's the correct information from The Eyes of Darkness. It's the same exact description, except with Wikipedia it says, The Eyes of Darkness is a thriller novel by American writer Dean Koontz, released in 1981. Not by Rob Hopkins, released in 2020. So weird. Now, Google has since corrected that since I published this piece on the Dean Koontz book. Just something I think that is very interesting, kind of setting the stage for what is to come. Because it does seem like some people were in the know about this pandemic coming about. Oh, there's also something I just am publishing today from Whitney Webb about these pandemic bonds that were sold. And people only make a bunch of money on them if a pandemic wasn't declared by the WHO until, I think, sometime later this year in the developing world. So it looks like there's some financial shenanigans going on with whether or not this gets declared a pandemic. Very strange stuff. Why they even have pandemic bonds that were just created a few years ago in the first place is pretty weird. Anyway, let's turn to this article by Makia Freeman, 7 NWO Agendas Accompanying the Coronavirus Outbreak. While the coronavirus epidemic continues, with people debating on both sides whether it is being overplayed or underplayed, it is worthwhile pausing to consider what agendas, and I mean which NWO, and I, Kyle, mean which JWO agendas, are being rolled out using the epidemic as a cover or pretext. Now, guys, this is just kind of entry-level stuff here. I'm going to get to the serious agenda that I think is at play in just a little bit. As I covered in my last article, the coronavirus 5G connection and cover-up, with these kind of outbreaks, there's always a dual motivation for authorities, the motivation to hype and the motivation to downplay, because both approaches serve the ruling class in different ways. Deception is a hallmark of government, in particular the Mossad, guys, and clearly all the more so in an emergency, so it is always going to be hard to trust whatever news or stats are coming from official sources. Regardless of the virus's true origins and virulence, we can say for sure that there are several agendas being pushed as you read these words. It's the same old Hegelian dialectic strategy of problem, reaction, solution, and whatever the reality is on a microbial level, the world's population has the perception of a problem, so the ruling class has another opportunity to make their order out of chaos. Below are seven NWO agendas being carried out due to the coronavirus epidemic. 1. Centralized control of information, i.e. censorship and narrative control. Quite a few of the speakers at the Event 201 simulation hosted by the Johns Hopkins Center in partnership with the World Economic Forum, again, tying in the coronavirus to financial instability and the recession/depression we see coming here with stocks plummeting, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, spoke of the need for centralized control of information during a pandemic, including one speaker, Lavan Thiru, described as a monetary authority of Singapore, who mentioned a step up from the part of the government on enforcement actions against fake news. There were some who said big tech is no longer a platform but a broadcaster and must be made to combat fake news. Another speaker in typical fashion demonized conspiracy theories. Here's a quote directly from the simulation/make-believe event, which came true 6 weeks later. Quote, disinformation and misinformation are wreaking havoc. Pharmaceutical companies are being accused of introducing the virus so they can make money on drugs and vaccines. And I've seen public faith in their products plummet. Oy vey! Unrest due to false rumors and divisive messaging is rising and is exasperating the spread of the disease as levels of trust fall. And people stop cooperating with response efforts. This is a massive problem, one that threatens governments and trusted institutions. National governments are considering or have already implemented a range of interventions to combat misinformation. Some governments have taken control of national access to the internet. Others are censoring websites and social media content. And a small number have shut down internet access completely to prevent the flow of misinformation. Penalties have been put in place for spreading harmful falsehoods, including arrests. The plan is to continue the censorship, which big tech has been spearheading for years now, using the excuse of harmful fake news by claiming that the dissemination of false information during an emergency is a bigger problem than usual and must be stopped. Here are some other quotes from the event. I do think that there needs to be sort of an honest broker, a centralized command and control organization that really brings together the public-private sector, both on a global approach and also on a local approach. Yes, I agree, and I want to speak to the point about having the honest broker, and I think in this regard the United Nations fits the bill. It's important that the UN and WHO remain very clear, but when they challenge governments directly, they often get into this issue of sovereignty, and so I think it's really important not to have that as the only response. It's really critical to remember soft power influence. The last statement really reveals yet another dominant NWO agenda in so many areas of life, narrative control. Two, the cashless agenda. The cashless agenda is a long-term NWO scheme that goes hand-in-hand with transhumanism, i.e. the digitization of everything in society, including things like money, information, and life itself. Power-hungry control freaks, the types of people that gravitate towards government, love the idea of a cashless society because then every single economic transaction can be traced, which allows authorities to build an even more complete picture of who you are so as to stop any possible disobedience or revolution before it happens. It also increases governmental revenue via taxation. As this activist post article highlights, China has jumped on the opportunity to forward the cashless agenda by claiming that paper money must now be taken out of circulation due to the possibility that it could contain traces of COVID-19, the coronavirus, and therefore contribute to the spreading of the coronavirus. Martial law quarantines, number three here. Governments love martial law scenarios because normal human rights are suspended. Authoritarian China has been lauded by many globalists, such as late David Rockefeller, as a model for the New World Order. Some of the photos and videos coming out of China showing the police state there have been horrific. Another crisis, another opportunity for the government to see how much they can get away with under the banner of fighting the virus. Four, mandatory vaccination. The coronavirus epidemic has provided a good excuse for governments around the world to introduce one of their favorite NWO agendas, mandatory vaccination. The reason why this agenda is particularly so well-liked is that it allows authorities access to the human body, and not just the citizen's body, but his or her bloodstream too. Truthfully, we have no idea what is in that needle when it gets injected, so all sorts of things could be implanted in our bodies without our knowledge or consent. Coincidentally or not, China passed a law on June 29, 2019 that rolled out a national mandatory vaccination program. Coincidentally or not, the law went into effect on December 1, 2019, just weeks before the coronavirus epidemic became a worldwide news story. I'm going to skip reading the article. The quote from, I also have to wonder about the implications when we have so-called experts like Ralph Baric who are pointing out that this coronavirus epidemic may include asymptomatic carriers, as in the story of the 10-year-old Chinese boy who had no symptoms but allegedly tested positive for COVID-19. This may be helpful information, but it also adds fuel to the mandatory vaccine fire, so to speak, because then the authorities claim that they have to vaccinate everyone to protect society due to all these possible hidden asymptomatic carriers that could pop up and infect everyone. By extension, mandatory vaccination may also include DNA vaccines and microchipping. Bill Gates' ID 2020, digital identification via microchipping. If Bill Gates is involved in it, it's bad for humanity. NWO point man Gates has been heavily pushing GMOs and vaccines for years, including slipping up and admitting that vaccines contribute to population control. He was part of Event 201 that simulated the coronavirus epidemic before it happened. He didn't have any business relationship or friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. So now we have to ask, that's what his quote, he said. That's what he said, even though he's pictured with him. So now we have to ask how else this sold-out NWO frontman is benefiting from the virus. Turns out the answer may be found in yet another globalist project Gates has been promoting, ID 2020. This is the human microchipping agenda, repackaged. It sells itself as a trusted and reliable way to fulfill a fundamental and universal human right, safeguarding your identity both online and in the physical world. Quotes about ID 2020, you can look into this yourself. It says that testing grounds are primarily in the third world, but that the group is now working with governments here in the United States to start microchipping people through vaccination. Oh, perfect. Since Gates was obviously intimately involved in planning this outbreak and ensuring his companies have the patents and vaccines for the newly released virus, is he also planning on using the coronavirus epidemic to further promote ID 2020? 6. Agenda 2030, Wuhan slated to be one of China's smart cities. A massive agenda involved in the coronavirus epidemic is the agenda of all agendas, UN Agenda 2030, which involves smart cities. Guess what? Before the outbreak, China had already planned which of its cities were going to be the ones slated to become the pilot smart cities. Wuhan was one of them, which makes sense why it was also the site of Chinese 5G rollout, as covered in my previous article. See here. Wuhan Future City, located in eastern East Lake High-Tech Development Zone, is one of the four concentrated talent bases for major state-owned enterprises and the only future science and technology town approved by the State Council for Central and Western regions. 7. Is the coronavirus epidemic a race-based bioweapon? She says, I don't know if I'd classify this as an NWO agenda, but a race-based bioweapon is certainly a likely possibility here. Consider that virtually all known deaths from the coronavirus epidemic thus far have been in China. Only around 4 deaths outside of China have been reported. That's changed a little bit since now. So, race-based bioweapons, something Israel's been looking into for a long, long time. Conclusion, coronavirus epidemic being used to push NWO agendas. Interestingly, the opening ceremony of the Military World Games in Wuhan declared a new world, and I see a screenshot of it here, which suggests the phrase new world order and also suggests societal transformation. Yet another clue that this entire event was pre-planned. Yeah, they had the Military World Games in freaking Wuhan just weeks before this whole outbreak took place. Really. Whatever the truth turns out to be about the origin of the virus itself, who created it, how it was released, and whether it is really as dangerous as it is hyped, there can be no doubt that the entire coronavirus epidemic phenomenon is being used to accelerate several NW agendas in typical problem-reaction-solution style. Now, this author, Makia Freeman, has referenced her article about the coronavirus 5G connection and cover-up. I recommend people read that one as well. This does seem to be a very important connection here. And just briefly looking through this article, the date for the Wuhan military games is the same one as the start of the Event 201 simulation. They both started October 18th, 2019. Same day. Who would have thought? What a crazy coincidence. And is it just, you know, a coincidence that the that 5G RF radiation has a very similar set of symptoms to the common cold, the flu, the coronavirus? Isn't that something? It certainly is. The connection cannot be denied. And Wuhan was the first, or one of the first, places in China where 5G was rolled out. And then you look at some of the other places where the sickness has spread, like in Italy and even in Iran, you see articles from this year, last year, about how they're working rapidly to roll out 5G. So even if they don't openly have 5G in these areas, do they? Are they testing it? What is going on? What is this connection between the coronavirus and 5G? Is the virus itself even a real thing? What I'm getting at is whether or not germ theory is correct. Now, I do think that there are bioweapons, but blaming this all on a virus, I think, could be a big distraction. So I'm just trying to get people not to think that this all stems from just a virus alone. Perhaps 5G enables the virus to go to work. Maybe it weakens the immune system so that the coronavirus bioweapon can get in there and wreak havoc. I don't know. I haven't studied this in depth enough. I got a comment from Ian. This was sent via a private message here, but he doesn't mind me reading it, about an article from David Goldberg, or rather a podcast from David Goldberg that I posted on the Tribune. And he says, regarding the goys being killed and got rid of, can I just say that years ago when it first came out about the FEMA camps and thousands of plastic coffins, electric guillotines were claimed to be installed. Whilst it was obvious that the camps were real, I dismissed the idea of guillotines being present as ridiculous. Fast forward a few years, now there is much talk of Noahide laws, the punishment for breaking them being none other than beheading. Far too much of a coincidence for my liking. Another topic. The force field around a high-voltage electricity is called the corona. Yes. When the corona is breached, lightning or arc over occurs. People working within or near the corona experience symptoms the same as those reported regarding coronavirus. 5G causes the high-voltage corona symptoms too. So this is definitely something that you should be looking into. But you know who doesn't want you looking into it? The mainstream Jewish media. Here's an article from the BBC. Coronavirus fake news is spreading fast. It looks like the fake news is spreading faster than the coronavirus. This is a real big threat. Something to keep your eyes on. This article just came out yesterday, written by Rory Kellen-Jones. As the coronavirus, or to be precise, COVID-19, spreads around the world, getting accurate information about the disease becomes ever more important. And in the social media age, that puts a heavy responsibility on the likes of Facebook and YouTube. These are platforms that billions now rely on for news, and they are already providing fertile territory for those wanting to spread misinformation. On Facebook, it is in groups opposing vaccines and those campaigning against 5G mobile phone networks that scare stories appear most likely to take hold. I wonder why. These people, they don't want neurotoxins injected into their children and themselves, and they also don't want to have microwave radiation just blasting them and their families. These people are obviously conspiracy theorists. I've scanned a number of the 5G groups and found plenty of comments suggesting there's a link between the virus and the new networks. The Stop 5G UK group has more than 27,000 members. Good. One of whom has posted this. I've heard it's not a serious virus. It's about as bad as a flu or cold, so really this is just a perfect plan to cover up EMF/5G related illnesses. Scroll down, and others have shared links to websites and videos connecting the coronavirus to the rollout of 5G in the part of China where it originated. 5G launches in Wuhan weeks before coronavirus outbreak, reads the headline on an article in a publication called The News Commenter. Is that not correct? Did 5G not roll out in Wuhan as the first, or one of the first, in China? A YouTube video with the title Wuhan Coronavirus is a 5G LED Smart Street Light Testbed is also popular in this group and others. Other YouTube videos share complex conspiracy theories, including a suggestion that the Diamond Princess cruise ship, whose passengers had to be quarantined, was affected by the virus because it used 5G technology for its connectivity. Is that true or not? I'm suspecting that it is true. And that is quite interesting. Another popular theory is that the virus was engineered in a lab and deliberately released by, take your pick, the Chinese or American government. Hey, why don't you mention the Israeli government? Skipping ahead a little bit. To be fair to Facebook, it appears to have upped its game when it comes to combating misinformation. Search for coronavirus on its platform, and the top results will be reliable information from sites such as the World Health Organization. If you find an anti-vaccination group you want to join, a pop-up message appears saying, "Learn why the WHO recommends vaccinations to prevent many diseases." That's nice of Facebook. YouTube, too, appears to be trying to calm fears, with a WHO banner ad appearing above any videos about the virus. But on at least one conspiracy theory video, adverts are still appearing, meaning that the site's owner, Google, is still profiting from misinformation. Facebook says that as well as promoting accurate information, it has taken steps to combat the spread of misinformation about the virus. Its third-party fact-checkers investigate dubious claims, and when they rate information as false, the company limits its spread across Facebook and Instagram. It's so ridiculous. I mean, this is Big Brother on steroids, what they're doing these days. Adverts that could misinform people or suggest that something is in limited supply are banned. For instance, Facebook would not allow an ad with the claim that face masks are 100% guaranteed to prevent the spread of the virus. A YouTube spokesperson said the company was committed to providing timely and helpful information and reducing the spread of harmful misinformation. It's just so interesting, the parallels between how they're describing the spread of the disease and also the spread of misinformation. They're treating it in a similar fashion, right? Quarantining it, trying to stamp it out, just banning it. But while YouTube bans videos promoting medically unsubstantiated ways to prevent the virus, it seems it does not remove or flag material that promotes conspiracy theories about it. I contacted a company whose adverts appeared before one of the videos, London-based MVH Marketing. A spokeswoman said the firm spends its advertising money with YouTube rather than the video creators, and usually the platform ensured that ads were not placed next to unsuitable content. She said the firm had now ensured its ads would not be seen again on this particular video. Obviously, we wouldn't want to be associated with something that did not fit with our brand. The social media platforms appear to be getting better at stopping misinformation from going viral. Get it? At least in public posts, but inside private groups, many with thousands of members, fake news is a commodity that still seems in great demand. Yeah, BBC is totally not fake news. Completely reliable. Never lies about anything, right? Now, what I wanted to get to here is how the spread of fake news is not the only thing that's being talked about as being viral or plague-like. Anti-Semitism is spreading like the plague these days. Oh yeah, we're seeing a lot of references to anti-Semitism being like a virus or like a plague. Let me just go through a few instances here. I'm not going to read all of these articles, but I did want to get through just a few of them to show you what I'm talking about. Here's one out of the Times of Israel. Netanyahu urges Europe to take a stand against plague of anti-Semitism. This was from a little over a year ago, February 19th, 2019. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Tuesday urged European leaders to take a strong stand against anti-Semitism after the overnight vandalism of dozens of graves in a French Jewish cemetery. They would have never done it themselves. Never. Just like how they would never have called in all those bomb threats from Israel to American Jewish community centers to give a justification for banning a bunch of Holocaust denial books and white supremacy books off of Amazon. And yeah, then once it was found out that it was an Israeli who was calling those bomb threats, none of those books ended up back on Amazon. So hey, yeah, we got found out, but job well done. Today, something shocking happened in France, Netanyahu said in a Hebrew video he published on social media. 80 Jewish graves were desecrated with Nazi symbols by wild anti-Semites. Wild, huh? I called on the leaders of France and Europe to take a strong stand against anti-Semitism, Netanyahu continued. It is a plague that endangers everyone, not just us, and it must be condemned wherever and whenever it rears its head. Okay. How about this one from ClevelandJewishNews.com? German political parties infected by anti-Semitism virus, says Jewish leader. All German political parties are infected with hatred of Jews, the chairman of the Jewish community in Halle, Germany, told the Bild newspaper on Sunday. And when was this? December 24th, 2019. So, actually, this was after the appearance of the coronavirus. All parties are infected by the anti-Semitism virus, said Max Przeworowski. It is a big problem that everyone points their finger at others, but clears themselves of any suspicion. Of course, the AfD has a big problem with anti-Semitism, and the willingness to stamp it out is less than with other parties. Yeah, they also have the JAFD, the Jewish Alternative for Deutschland. They have a whole Jewish section. Anyway, he added, I would not recommend to anyone to walk through Halle wearing a kippah. Okay, so he just, you get it. He's calling this a virus. The anti-Semitism virus. They keep using this terminology. Here we go. Douglas Murray from National Review, March 21st, 2019. The anti-Semitism virus. Oy. On the left, it is spreading once again. One of the surest signs that somebody does not understand anti-Semitism is that he talks about defeating it, destroying it, or otherwise ending it. For many Jews and anyone else who has had to take note of anti-Semitism, such inflated claims elicit only a dark laugh. Imagining you might end anti-Semitism is like saying you might forever postpone the aging process. An ambition, certainly, but one perpetually condemned to disappointment. So, you know, he just goes on, and let's try to find any quotes about it being particularly like a virus. Okay, here we go. Anti-Semitism can never be fully explained for the same reason it cannot ever be fully defeated, because it is a shapeshifter. It is a virus that endlessly mutates, taking advantage of environment, locale, host, events, and more. To survey the number of its ostensible causes is to survey accusations that themselves encompass everything. Jews didn't do nothing. Didn't do nothing to cause any of this. Going towards the end here, and that is why the description of anti-Semitism as a virus is so accurate. It gets into hosts who aren't always aware of what they have let in. It cannot be conquered, for one day it will come from one direction, the next day from another, with the charge sheet changing as swiftly as the direction of assault. Yet it still has to be fought, of course. For a society that gets lax about trying to keep the virus down is likely to develop a full-blown contagion in due course. Wouldn't that be great if we just had a full-blown contagion of anti-Semitism? That would be pretty incredible. This article is out of The Atlantic from March 6, 2019 by Elliot Cohen. Guys, these are all really recent articles about the virus of anti-Semitism. And this one was about the carnival that happened in Aalst, Belgium last year, which had the Vismoulin float with the Jews with the rat on the shoulder and the money bags and everything. And because they took away the UNESCO heritage thing from Aalst, Belgium carnival, this year they just doubled down and there was just so much anti-Semitism. And it just happened a few days ago. You can check out the a little video of it on Renegade Tribune if you're interested. So yeah, they tried to stamp it out, but oh, this virus just spread to more and more people. That's what's going to happen, guys, when you act the way that you do. Anyway, let's take a look here. So he talks about the float and Aalst. Anti-Semitism, or to speak more plainly, Jew hatred, is the animus that never dies. Like some malignant virus, it always lies dormant, ready to wake. Like other viruses, it may be, at various times, more or less virulent, more or less lethal. There probably will not be a massacre of Jews in Belgium in the next few years. What happened a few years after the float rolled down the streets of Marburg requires no elaboration. In the wake of the Holocaust, the deliberate killing of Jewish non-Israeli civilians is usually condemned across the political spectrum. Blah, blah, blah. You know, he says, butcheries of Israeli civilians being often excused as an understandable expression of Palestinian frustration. When is that ever done? Is it ever done in the media, which is controlled by Jews? No. Maybe some people feel like, well, they kind of had it coming. Yeah, maybe some people feel that way. But it's never expressed in the media. The guy writes, but those are easy sentiments because it costs nothing to sympathize with dead Jews as opposed to standing up for live ones. The virus survives. Huh, anti-Semitism as a virus, as a plague. You know who actually wrote about this? Was one Miss Susan Sontag, the terrible, terrible Jewess who has this ebook for sale. You could buy this from Springer.com. You could buy the ebook for $85. Whoa. Or we could just buy this chapter for $30. No thanks. I'll just read the little preview here. This is from chapter 5 of her book, which is titled Legacies of Plague in Literature, Theory, and Film, I think. The chapter is Plague, Jews, and Fascist Anti-Semites, The Great Incurable Malady. In her small but influential book, Illness as Metaphor. Okay, so this book wasn't by Susan Sontag, but it's referencing her. In her small but influential book, Illness as Metaphor, Susan Sontag observes how plague is perceived as a disease which afflicts a whole community, not like cancer or tuberculosis, as a force which isolates and sets the individual aside from society. This perception is rooted in plague's historical and cultural legacy, as much as stemming from a specific symptom profile. Each different disease carries its set of unique meanings, forged from the official and unofficial responses they provoke. And these associations become even more complex when the disease in question, like plague, has a mysterious etiology for those it afflicts. As Sontag outlines, nothing is more punitive than to give a disease a meaning, that meaning being invariably a moralistic one. Any important disease whose causality is murky and for which treatment is ineffectual tends to be awash in significance. First, the subjects of deepest dread, corruption, decay, pollution, enemy, weakness, are identified with the disease. Then, in the name of the disease, that is, using it as a metaphor, that horror is imposed on other things. The disease becomes adjectival. The moral and adjectival mobilization of plague is a virulent aspect of anti-Semitic and fascist political discourse of the 1930s. Over the decade, Nazi rhetoric against the Jews gained considerable strength and became widely disseminated, marking the return and revival of an accusatory discourse which associated Jews with plague. The earliest written evidence of such a link appears in the Old Testament, which carries many examples of God punishing the Jews and also their enemies with plagues of different kinds. The perception of Jews as plague bringers or plague carriers was existent in early religious and rhetorical discourse, and these views linked Jewishness to plague in such a way that the Jews themselves began to be perceived as a threat afflicting the community. So guys, when they're calling us, the anti-Semites, a plague, a virus, what they're doing is projecting. They are the plague. They are the virus. Martin Luther articulated what Hitler would go on to echo. Jews are the plague. The scapegoating examined in Chapter 3 in relation to the pharmakos of ancient plague rituals is an active component of Nazi anti-Semitism. The way in which community and politics are construed and accompanied by anti-Semitism in the period can be usefully understood through a consideration of the work of René Girard on community structures and Jacques Derrida's discussion of autoimmunity within the social bond. Both thinkers are appropriate, if in very different ways, because their theories of social structures draw upon the language of the body, contagion, and infection. In the 1930s, it was not only anti-Semites who deployed plague as a rhetorical vehicle. Hitler's use of plague was incorporated and turned around, back upon itself, in the first major analysis of the psychology of fascism, published by Wilhelm Reich. Wilhelm Reich was a Jew who abused children. Fact. And yet he's held up as a hero in a lot of the alternative media. As a Jew, Reich was particularly aware of the role that anti-Semitism played in Nazi values and rhetoric. His analysis of fascism deliberately brands it a plague. Yet, despite Reich's respect for Freud and enthusiastic adoption of certain psychoanalytical concepts, his use of play quickly spreads from naming fascism to becoming a tool in his arsenal of ways to criticize other practitioners of the Jewish science, psychoanalysis, and any detractors from his theories. With its emphasis on psychic structures and its interest in phylogenesis, coupled with its Jewish founder and high number of Jewish practitioners, psychoanalysis constitutes a significant testing ground for the way in which plague infects discourses of accusation, blame, and anti-Semitic feeling, and how attempts to resist or refute such discourses often have recourse to the very same plague metaphor. Yeah, so there's a quote, actually, by Carl, supposedly from Freud, as overheard when Freud was talking to Carl Jung on the ship to America, which said that Freud was saying that essentially these Americans don't know it, but we're bringing them the plague. A long history, Jews and the plague. Plague visited. Okay, so they're talking about how plague visited a German area and the rituals they do to get rid of it, and Jews being blamed and everything. There's a long history there, but the preview ends, so I'm not going to get into it because we don't get to get very far. So now, let's take a look at this new movie that just came out. Viral. Anti-Semitism in Four Mutations. This is from Hollywood Reporter. It's a film review that was posted just 1 week ago. Huh. Viral. Anti-Semitism in Four Mutations. And the film just opened 6 days ago on February 21st. Andrew Goldberg's documentary chronicles the rise of anti-Jewish bigotry and violence around the world. Isn't that something? So he made a film in 2007, Anti-Semitism in the 21st Century, The Resurgence. And so this is his second effort, and he says it barely scratches the surface on the subject matter. The fast-paced anecdotal documentary, narrated by actress Juliana Margulies, begins in powerfully dramatic fashion with audio from 9/11 calls about the massacre at Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue, in which 11 Jewish worshippers were brutally murdered by a far-right fanatic. Fake news! 100% fake news! You can't give me one piece of evidence to show that any of that even happened. Robert Bowers, it does not even appear in Pennsylvania's criminal justice system. It's all fake news. These people didn't die. It's a staged little play. They're liars. They lie about everything. We're then introduced to Russ Walker, a candidate for the North Carolina State House, who seems like a reasonably sensible, moderate politician until he unveils his true feeling about minorities, including Jews. Okay, you get it. You get the idea. As they talk about the spread of the far right and Holocaust denial, and even the far left Labour Party with Jeremy Corbyn, oy vey. Like he's actually an opponent of world Jewry, really. So they go through all this other stuff, interview a bunch of big names coming out of Dark Star Pictures, the production company with so much film, produced by Andrew Goldberg and Diana Robinson. Okay. Not going to watch it, but you get the idea. It's called freaking Viral, and it's about anti-Semitism mutating. It's just so ridiculous. They are very much concerned about the spread of anti-Semitism. I just published this earlier today. There's a new survey out that claims that one-fifth of the people in Europe think that a secret Jewish cabal runs the world. It should be more because that's a freaking fact. They shouldn't think that they run the world. They should know that they run the world. And really, is this secret Jewish cabal? Because a lot of them are pretty much out in the open. The survey was conducted by the Action and Protection League. And they did a survey of 16,000 Europeans, so 1,000 from 16 different countries like Austria, Belgium, Czech Republic, France, Germany, UK, and Poland. And then they presented these findings at the European Jewish Association's conference in Paris this past Monday. I just want to note here, we should not take this survey at face value. It seems like they have a vested interest in making anti-Semitism seem insanely widespread so they can justify taking even more money from us and also, you know, draconian crackdowns and the rest. But I also should note, given the hate speech laws and everything that they have over there, do you really think a lot of these people would answer honestly, the people surveyed, if they were asked, you know, I don't know who they were told the survey was being done by, but let's just assume they're being honest. And they said, hey, we're a Jewish group. We're doing a survey about anti-Semitism. Do you think Jews run the world? How many of the people do you think would say, oh, yeah, I do? Most of them say, oh, no. No, I don't have an anti-Semitic bone in my body. Please don't call the new NKVD to come raid my house and kill me, murder me for being an anti-Semite. Or, you know, they haven't gotten there yet. They haven't got back to the old Bolshevik bloody terror thing that they did in the Soviet Union, where if you were an anti-Semite, they would murder you, or later they would throw you in an insane asylum and torture you, but they can throw you in prison for quite a number of years, so most people wouldn't really be honest, I don't think, on a survey, so perhaps these numbers are even much higher. So apparently a fifth of Europeans say that a secretive Jewish cabal controls the world, politics and economics. They do. But it's not really secretive. And let me just do the math for you real quickly. Supposedly there are around 740 million Europeans. And this would mean that 148 million people know that the world is controlled by Jews in Europe. That's a lot of people. If that is true, we've got a huge amount of people who know the score. That's crazy. The same number, around 148 million people, also believe that Jews exploit Holocaust victimhood for their own needs. They don't? How many times do they demand more money? Demand special treatment? Demand that you look the other way with their crimes? Because, oh, the Holocaust, oh, the trauma. Of course they do. A quarter of the respondents agree with the statement, Israel's policies make me understand why some people hate Jews. Not even that I hate Jews because of Israel's policy, but it makes me kind of understand. You know, covering Palestinian homes with skunk spray, bombing with illegal weapons like white phosphorus, innocent Palestinians, you know, whether they're in schools or hospitals, you know, are sniping any of the Palestinians that even come close to the borders of their ancestral homelands, even though they're unarmed, you know, imprisoning, torturing children without any charges, forcing all the Palestinians to live in open-air concentration camps. I can't understand why anybody would hate the Jews for doing these things. I don't get it. Call me a good goy, but I just don't understand how this could engender any kind of hatred. More than a third agreed with the assertion that during World War II, people from our nation suffered as much as Jews. Listen, people from the Goyim nations, and Goyim actually means nations, suffered far more than Jews. So let's just take for Auschwitz, for example. While Jews were getting fed a pretty decent diet, it wasn't ideal, they're getting fed a pretty decent diet, some of them had to do some work, and they had hospitals and everything, and even a place for Jewesses to give birth to more little Jews, even though, I don't know why they would allow this to happen since they're trying to get rid of all the Jews in this death camp. You know, they're fed and clothed, they were deloused, and they were allowed to put on plays. They had soccer matches. Had friendly soccer matches with the guards. They were swimming in Olympic-sized swimming pools, while Germans all across the country, cities and towns, were being firebombed, burnt alive, melted alive. And beyond that, the number of Europeans who died in World War II, some people estimate like 50 million. So even if the 6 million number was correct, 50 million. And then just look at the Soviet Union, which was run by Jews. The Bolsheviks were Jews. Look at what they did. Look what they did to their own people. Look what they did to people who fell under their control, the Ukrainians with the Holodomor. The European people suffered far worse than the Jews suffered. The Red Cross numbers put it somewhere like, what, about 250,000 Jews died. And that makes sense, because you just look at the numbers of Jews before the war and then after the war. 6 million. There's no way they could even have lost 6 million. It's a bunch of BS. And of course, they had to revise the Auschwitz plaque down from the absurd claim of 4 million down to 1.5 million. But hey, if you subtract that number, 2.5 million, from the 6 million number, and say that's how many Jews died, even though that's far more than actually died, you could be arrested, thrown in prison in any or many European countries. So what is the what's the solution here, Jews? The European Jewish Association have now called on all European leaders to adopt its action plan to combat anti-Semitism.
The Goyim is starting to think we rule over them, so let's use our control of their governments to have their leaders crack down on them, to get this crazy idea that we control things out of their heads. We gotta combat this viral spread of anti-Semitism.
The plan includes adopting the International Holocaust Remembrance and Alliance's working definition of anti-Semitism. Other elements of the plan include appointing a special envoy on combating anti-Semitism. Trump has one of those. Mandating schools include lessons on anti-Semitism. And legislating bans on anti-Semitic symbols in public, including Nazi imagery. Most of the countries in Europe already have all these things. Do they really think that these measures are going to stop anti-Semitism, though? Yeah, maybe some people won't express their anti-Semitic thoughts as publicly as they once did, or at least on a survey. They don't want the new NKVD to raid their home. They don't want to be thrown in prison for having wrongthink. But I'd say, if anything, this is just going to cause more people to know that Jews rule over them. Rabbi Menachem Margolin, chairman of the association, said, "We as Jewish communities cannot eradicate anti-Semitism on our own. After 20 years dealing with this subject, I've come to the understanding that no matter how many schools we visit, no matter how many delegations we bring to Auschwitz, it's all just a drop in the bucket. Therefore, we realize that the way to fight anti-Semitism is to pass on the responsibility to European governments." And right there, Margolin is saying, hey, we can bend the governments of Europe to our will, thereby proving the 148 million Europeans, supposedly, who believe in that anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that Jews run things, to be correct. So the Daily Mail just goes on kvetches about all the hate that Jews are experiencing, and, you know, basically, which means that Europeans need to give up even more of their rights and be more thoroughly ruled and openly ruled by Jews and Jewish interests. So what are they going to do about this spread, this viral spread of anti-Semitism? I published an article, or I put out a post, rather, because it was the it was a podcast, from David Goldberg, who supposedly died on June 8th of 2019. And in this podcast, David Goldberg was saying that Trump is working with the Zionists to round up millions of Americans after a staged power blackout, around 15 million, the anti-Semites in particular, and murder them. Mainly white suburban people murdered by DHS, ICE, whoever. And Goldberg was saying that he has a White House source who is telling him that this was the plan. Goldberg also said that the alternative media organizations that still exist on places like YouTube are, and ones that are exposing Israel Zionism, you know, actually telling truthful things, the ones with good work, good production value and everything, that they're actually run by Israel to tag activists for assassination. So anybody that's watching these videos, commenting on them, agreeing with them, they're targets for assassination in this Project Pogo and Project Zipher that Goldberg is talking about. He names Adam Green in particular, talks about Alex Jones, but Adam Green would probably be the best example. You or I, or anybody else that's honest and can present this material effectively, would not be able to be allowed on YouTube saying the same things, just the same exact things, verbatim, that Adam Green says. Nor would we be allowed to fly into Israel, then cross into Palestine like he did with Jake Morphoniass. A comment from Gith Yankee on this post. There were a lot of comments on this post. And guys, believe me, I wasn't telling people that they need to... you don't need to believe me. Just go read the description I had. I wasn't telling people to believe David Goldberg. I was just saying, what do you think? Is this a psyop? And so Gith Yankee responds, evaluating this talk, credible. One, Trump will declare himself king of Israel. Check. This happened August 2019 after this video was made. That is true. Search Trump king of Israel. He declared himself king of Israel. And that's what David Goldberg claimed Trump would do. That is an interesting confirmation. That's actually, he writes, that's actually kind of specific and a good prediction. Credible too. There's a limited timetable. He says this operation will go into effect 2020, at latest 2021. So we'll know if it's BS in less than a year. Not credible. One, 15 million YouTube viewers will be killed. This seems absolutely outlandish. The entire military and police force of the U.S. would have to be in on it, rounding up many of them themselves in a blackout or flu. I'll get to my own thoughts of this. YouTube viewers do not, in fact, comprise a resistance force, so this plan and prediction seems ridiculous. Not credible, too. Predicts blackouts, but then maybe a flu that targets dissidents. These scenarios are completely unrelated and what I would say impossible to carry out. I'd say not necessarily, especially when you consider what's going on with the coronavirus right now. And that could be used as a cover story. My belief ranges from totally unbelievable start to finish to maybe this guy had some inside info, which he's using to get people to believe in this operation as basically a chilling effect. If you Google this Project Zipher, it's repeated over a bunch of UFO sites. Maybe an anti-Ike psyop to keep conspiracy nuts tail chasing for another year or two. But guys, they couldn't just round up and kill 15 million people. What did the Bolsheviks do? Is it so different now that they couldn't do this now? They control things in America, maybe just as much as they did in Russia, more so. And then just remember what the Weather Underground was saying that they wanted to do. And these were basically Bolsheviks as well. There was the 1980s documentary about terrorism, wherein the former Weather Underground member Larry Grathwall, he was an informant, recounted hearing a conversation about the prospect of overthrowing the U.S. government and then inviting other communist regimes to invade and occupy the United States and then setting up re-education centers to brainwash Americans into accepting communism. And that about 25 million people, diehard capitalists who refused to comply and embrace communism would be murdered. Yeah. So they were planning to do it. Now, just because they're planning to do it doesn't mean it's necessarily going to happen, but I would not be surprised if the Trump administration, working with their allies in Israel, were not planning to take out the terrorists and their families. Just think about how many times Trump was saying that in the campaign trail. You got to take out the terrorists and their families. Well, who are the terrorists now? We've seen in New Jersey that the threat level of white supremacists is far higher. It's at the highest level, whereas ISIS and Boko Haram and all these other groups, it's very, very low comparatively. White supremacists, white nationalists, anti-Semites are the number one terror threat in America now, if you listen to the Jewish media and the Jewish government, Zog. So what does taking out the terrorists and their families entail? Well, that might be about 15 million people. Anti-Semites and their families. There you go. One fell swoop, but they'd probably do it so it wasn't obvious that who they were targeting. Maybe they'd use a bioweapon. Maybe the blackout takes place and people are purged. Maybe it's a purge. They got a couple shows out now. Hunters is one, which was criticized by these Jewish groups because it went a little far with the holo-hoaxing, with Jews being forced to play human chess, and that's not even one of their official stories. I'm sure if they had gone on about lampshades and soap, which have all been completely debunked, it wouldn't have been as bad, but the human chess, we never even wrote about that one. That wasn't in the Steven Spielberg film. So they have Hunters, about these Jews going out and taking out these Nazis. And then there's also The Hunt, which is these white conservative Americans being rounded up and hunted down and murdered. Just a couple maybe predictive programming. I don't know what exactly they're doing with this, but given my surname, I don't like it. But guys, they could very well just be intending to poison us. They are the poisoners. There's an article that's published on Renegade Tribune that I want you to check out. I'm not going to go through it. It's very, very long. It's called The Poisoners. And this was adapted from a series of tweets. There's a reason that Jews were blamed for the plague. They could have really been behind it. And the first quote's from Martin Luther. If they, the Jews, could kill us all, they would gladly do so. Aye, and often do it, especially those who profess to be physicians. They know all that is known about medicine in Germany. They can give poison to a man of which he will die in an hour, or in 10 or 20 years. They thoroughly understand this art. Poisoning, this is somebody else, I think, speaking. Poisoning was for a long time closely associated with sorcery and magic. Mysterious deaths might be attributed to the one or the other, and both purported to employ occult and sensational forces of nature. The same word was used in Greek and in Latin languages for poison and sorcery, for a drug and a philtre or magical potion. The fact that men actually were poisoned supported the belief in the possibility of sorcery, and this belief in its turn simulated excessive credulity in poisons, which were thought to act at a distance or after a long lapse of time. So, I just wanted to bring that up, that you should check that out. And I think it's very interesting that virus is an old term, and it used to mean poison. All right, guys, that's really all I have for you here tonight. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Blitz. I want to encourage everybody out there listening, if you have not supported this network, myself, please consider doing so. I went down to the post office box this past week, and I hadn't been in, I don't know, maybe about 5 weeks or so. And basically, it came out to, I got support averaging about $10 a day, less than $10 a day. Guys, I put so much on the line to put all of this out here to you. I know it's harder. I've been shut down from all of the payment processing platforms and fundraising. So you actually have to, you know, put a check in the mail or whatever, or send me some Bitcoin or something. It's a little bit harder, but I really would appreciate it if you could show some support. And I want to thank everybody out there who has continuously supported the work that we're doing here. I really do appreciate it. I just need your help sometimes, guys. All right, I'm going to go out with a clip from Zbigniew Brzezinski talking about how it's much easier to murder a million people than to control them.
That for the first time in human history, for the first time in all of human history, almost all of mankind is politically awake. And these new and old major powers face still yet another novel reality, in some respects unprecedented. And it is that while the lethality of their power is greater than ever, their capacity to impose control over the politically awakened masses of the world is at a historical low. I once put it rather pungently, and I was flattered that the British Foreign Secretary repeated this, as follows. Namely, in earlier times, it was easier to control a million people, literally. It was easier to control a million people than physically to kill a million people. Today, it is infinitely easier to kill a million people than to control a million people. It is easier to kill than to control.
War on error. We have declared war on error. War on error. We have declared war on error.